horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. It's not hour two. It's part two, second half on this Tuesday, and really has turned into an appreciation of Rick Porter. And just thinking about, you know, these last 20 years, and Porter's success was consistent, and it started right around 2000 with John Service, who joins us now. And literally the first horse I brought up yesterday when the news of Rick's passing kind of spread. Rich Migliori was with me, and I, for whatever reason, John, the first horse I mentioned was Jostle. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. And you know, this is, you introduced him to the world of racing, although I suppose there might have been, you know, some other experiences before you started to train for him.
No, actually, I had some horses for a very good friend of mine by the name of Joseph Viviani, and Joe worked for Rick for quite a few years. And apparently they were, if I remember the story correctly, they were on a train ride to going to New York, I think. And they were talking, and Rick was telling Joe that he needed another hobby. He didn't really play golf that much, and he just needed something to get into. And Joe talked him into getting a couple horses, and that was in 1994. He came to me, and I bought him two horses off of my brother-in-law. I bought him a filly and a colt, and the filly, her name was Dronetta, and the first time we ran her at Garden State Park, she won, and Rick was, he was locked in, man. He just, and I got to tell you, at the time, he had his first set of silks were fluorescent pink with a bright yellow fox head on the back and front and back of the silks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then, and then he started dabbling in a little bit, you know, a few horses here and there. And then it was probably about 4 years later when he started talking about trying to buy some made horses, and he was talking about spending some serious money. I really didn't know, you know, how big he wanted to get into the game and what he really wanted to do. And I actually ended up going private for Rick. I had horses for DJ Stable and some other clients, and I gave that all up and went private for Rick, and I was private for 2 years, and then we split up and then ended up back together again, and we went through a few bloodstock agents, you know, picking horses here and there, and I was fortunate enough to land Jostle at the Saratoga sale in 99, I think it was, or maybe 98. And just real quick, just to tell you how shrewd Rick was, I loved this filly, and he knew it. And she came in the ring, and obscure pedigree, really, and she got to about 100,000, and somebody bid 105, and Rick didn't bid anymore. And I was like, Rick, you know, I thought we were going to, he goes, there's no money on this filly. Well, make a long story short, she was RNA'd, and he said, go back to the barn and see if they'll take 75 for her. And we went back to the barn, and we went back and forth and back and forth, and ironically, they kept turning it down, and Rick was adamant he wasn't going to spend a penny more than 75,000 for her. And the sale was over, and I'm leaving the Saratoga sales ring, and I run into Duncan Taylor, and I said, Duncan, I know you don't want to take that filly all the way back to Kentucky. Sell her to us for 75. And he goes, hold on a minute. And he got on the phone, and he was on the phone for a while, and he came back, and he goes, she's yours for 75. And, you know, she ended up being the multiple grade one winner, and I think she made $1.4 million, and we sold her for $1.7 million. And that was the first good horse that I had for Rick. And I think it was the very next year on my advice, we brought Tom McGreevy on board. I had known Tom for 40 years, and we really hadn't had a lot of success with the guys we were using. And Rick decided to give Tom a shot. And I remember we were at the Keeneland September sale, and we had bought a couple horses, and we left. And we had just landed at the airport, and Tom McGreevy called and said, he goes, there's a filly late in the sale that you guys got to buy. And Rick was on board. We ended up buying her name was Zonk. We bought her for $85,000. She ended up being a multiple graded stake winner. She won the Affectionately 2 years in a row. She won one, I'm sure at the time, was definitely Rick's favorite race was the Delaware Oaks, because he loved Delaware. And, you know, and then we went on and had some really good horses together, and we had a good relationship. It was on and off, but, you know, I always respected him. He was great for my career. I mean, he was really the first guy that really got me into quality horses. And if it wasn't for Jossel, to be honest with you, I probably wouldn't have got Smarty Jones. But
that made, I mean, that the awareness, the with her run is what Chapman's.
Well, I tell you how it was told to me. So I was the assistant for Mark Reed for years before I went on my own. And the Chapmans were with Mark Reed before they went to Bobby Kamak. Well, then when Bobby got killed, they contacted Mark Reed, and they said, you know, we have a two-year-old at the farm that's supposedly pretty nice, and we want a trainer at Parks, which was the Philadelphia Park at the time, because that's where we like to run, but we don't know who to use. You know, and Mark Reed said, well, John Service has proven that he could train a good horse. I think that's the guy you need to go to. And they took Mark's advice and called me and asked me if I'd take him.
Unbelievable. And that's the way it's supposed to work. That's the way Nehru did it. Wow. Amazing. Jossel, for me, I can tell you, having moved to the area, moved to Saratoga in 99, I mean, she stands out. I just remember seeing her run, that summer. And I'm going to guess, I mean, the coaching club, of course, was still at Belmont, but she basically participated in most of the, you know, the New York sequence that summer, right? And went on a tear.
Yes. She actually, her two-year-old year, we sprinted her first time out, and she got beat. I think she was second or third. And then we stretched her out off of that, and she didn't lose another race as a two-year-old. She won the Salima, which was a grade three at the time. She won the Damoiselle. And then we took her to the fairgrounds and had her down there. And her first two starts at her three-year-old year weren't that good. And we decided to just, you know, cool the jets for a while and bring her back north and run her once we got back up here. And we got back here, and she did run in the Mother Goose, and she finished second. But then she started to put it together again. She came back off of that race, and she won the Black Eyed Susan. And then she won the Coaching Club, which was a mile and a half at that time. And then she came back and won the Alabama, and then came back and won the Cotillion. she had a very good year that year.
The fact now I've got the record up in front. She tormented Secret Status that summer. She beat her a bunch of times, I'm sure.
As a matter of fact, I'll tell you that she went wire to wire in the Coaching Club, and Secret Status was second. And going into the Alabama, the Secret Status camp purchased a rabbit, for the Alabama, and we just took back off the pace, and the rabbit in secret status ended up running 1-2 most of the race until we ran by him in the stretch. I think she won the Alabama by like 5 or 6.
The rabbit's name was cutely named Validar, and Aaron Grider was aboard. Pat Day was on secret status. That race also featured Spain, who was third under Choppy, and Critical Eye was in that race too with Herbie Castillo. This was a really nice Alabama field, and Jocelyn and Mike Smith went off and the backers got a fat 4-1 on her too that day. Pretty funny.
Yes. And that was Rick's first really good horse, I think.
Oh yeah, no doubt. And you know, I'm surprised we're 10 minutes into this conversation, and then we're focusing on the first Grade One winner, in Jocelyn. But yesterday, it took me a second to connect the dots on Rockport Harbor, and Rockport Harbor was one of those horses that came along for him with several of his trainers, and most recently with Mandela with Omaha Beach, that looked like a real player for the classic season. Now, talk about Rockport Harbor and Rick.
Well, that was a short list for Tom McGreevy, another. And I remember when we bought him, we were pretty much done, and Rick looked at me. He goes, "I'm going to bid one more bid. If we don't get him, I'm done." And we bid one more time, and we ended up getting him. But he showed talent from the beginning. He rolled through his two-year-old races. Very impressive. I mean, even the Remsen, when he got run up, when that horse stepped on him from behind and ripped half his foot off behind.
Right.
I mean Turner for home. Stu was still sitting on him, and I think the horse he beat was undefeated also, but that was the downfall in his career, because when that foot healed, it had a scar that grew with the hoof that never went away, and every time he he starts pounding on it, it would just open up like a quarter crack.
Ugh.
And he was the early book favorite for the Derby, and unfortunately he just That thing just followed him everywhere he went.
And for those, John, for those that have never seen it, if for people that have never seen that 2004 Remsen, you want to see two two-year-olds go at it for almost the whole race, galloping Grocer for the Waldbaums, and Dominic Schettino is the horse you were thinking of, and that's a forgotten classic.
And I think, Steve, to this day, I think that was the second fastest Remsen in history. They went 2-year-olds went a mile and eighth and 48 and change.
Yep, 48.88. Yep. I'm gonna. Hopefully, that's on. If it's not on video, I'll get the video people at Naira to dig it out, because. I don't think I was there. That would have been Cigar Mile Day, and I can't recall. I'll tell you who will recall in 10 minutes when he joins us, Andy Serling, because he's terrific when it comes to that. I'm glad we had a chance to talk McGreevy, and I know that the relationship did not end well, and the litany of winners. That Tom contributed to the Fox Hill legacy is unbelievable.
Absolutely. He was the guy that picked 90% of these grade one winners. I mean,
yeah.
That was all him. Yeah. And Round Pond was a filly that we purchased at Keeneland in September. It's on Tom's short list, and early on, she hadn't shown much, and we were going to Oaklawn Park with Rockport Harbor, and I remember she jumped up and worked pretty good, and I decided I was going to take her to Oaklawn, and at the time, my assistant my assistant said, why are you taking her? Because she just really hadn't shown a whole lot. And I said, well, she worked pretty good. If she continues to improve, you know, we're going to be all right. If she doesn't, I can always run her for a tag. And then I took her to Oaklawn, and she started working better and better. And then, you know, when we did end up running her, she was, we knew then she was a pretty nice filly. And, I mean, she went from maiden race to the fantasy to the, I think, the Acorn. And her race in the Acorn was most impressive, I thought. That was a huge race. But, yeah, she ended up being a multiple grade one winner also.
Absolutely. Yeah, we enjoyed. I'm glad you folded her in. He's somebody that really had an impact, and you know, created stallions as well as the litany of broodmare. And I tell you, there's probably he's on the short list. I would think, John. You talked about selling Jostle for $1.7 million. I mean, very few people had as much success doing that as Rick did, right? I mean, he took him to the top end, sold him at the top, and I guess the car dealer mentality paid off, selling high.
I'm telling, he was great at that. He really was. I mean, you know, there'd be times where I had horses that I really wasn't crazy about losing, but he was adamant that he was getting top dollar for him, and they were gone, and he was right every time. I got to tell you, every single time.
You know, that begs the question: who around that time? Who were you getting your cars from? Chapman Auto Group or Rick's Auto Group?
I bought a couple cars from Rick, and I bought a couple cars from Chapman. So.
Wait a minute.
Keep them both happy.
What do you mean bought? It wasn't in the deal to provide you wheels?
No, those deals don't happen.
Not with those two guys?
No.
That's great. John, I appreciate it. I since I've got you too, I want to add, I know you got speaking of cars, you got Car Guys Racing's Shiza in the Obeya tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, I entered back in a race here at Parks, and if it goes, I'm going to scratch her tomorrow and run her here, simply because it's just too tough a spot coming off the long layoff. You know, I'd really have it like to find a little easier spot for her because she's been off a while. And if it doesn't go, then we'll run in the Obeya. And she'll run well. But, again, it's a tough spot coming off a long layoff. I don't think she's run since, I want to say, November.
Well, and since we're talking the Chapmans as well, Pat's the Jones boy, a Smarty Jones gelding?
He'll be tough. He's a nice colt. He'll be tough. He's got some talent.
This is his second start. It took some time to get him to the races.
Yeah, he came up with a slight injury as a two-year-old. We had him ready. Matter of fact, I think I had him in, and we scratched him because of a little injury he came up with, and we gave him the time off, and he came back great. And I was kind of surprised he even got beat last time, but he ran a little green, and the horse that beat him came back and ran a really good second yesterday in an allowance race, first time going long. And he seemed to have improved a little bit since his maiden race, so I expect a big race from him tomorrow.
Well, nice. This is in the – what race is this? Hold on. I lost it. I had it on the screen, and now it disappeared. Oh, for goodness sakes. Here we go. It's the fifth race tomorrow at Parks, and we're talking about the Jones boy. And I am so tickled yeah, John, so often you look up at a race at Parks or, you know, in Maryland, and there's the blue jacket and the white ball, and it brings a smile to, I think, to everybody's face. In fact, there was that race where both the Chapmans and Chuck Zackney, Cash's King, died fairly recently, and the two familiar Mid-Atlantic Star Silks were... You know, we're in the same race. I'm going to forget. I think it might have been a stake. I'm not sure. Or a maiden race. And I'm happy that Pat is she's enjoying it, right? And the boys, are the boys still involved?
Not too much, no. No.
Okay.
Strictly Pat, and she is enjoying it, and she's just, you know, she's just messing with her homebreds, and she seems to come up with a pretty nice one every year.
Yeah.
You know, that does very well for her, so.
Well, she's one of the nicest people around the game, and I got to know her, and you know, Chuck Simon and I had a couple of horses that she had, you know, that she had bred, and you know, the Three Chimneys was looking, you know, to find somebody to train, and we ended up involved, and it was a real honor to, you know, to work with her.
She's a great person and a dear friend.
Well, I I'm looking at the Pennsylvania bred dam, which is also came from that you trained, Mo Honor, and her last rider was Anthony Black, my man.
Well, you know, it's crazy you say that because Anthony Black rode Rick Porter's first winner.
Did he really? I think he
said
that on the air. I think
he did. Yes,
oh, my gosh. He'll discuss that Thursday, undoubtedly.
That was Dronetta. April 23rd, 1994. I looked it up before you called just to so I would have that.
Yeah. April 3rd?
April 23rd.
April 23rd, 94, at Delaware?
At Garden State.
At Garden State, you said. That's right, at Garden State Park. Unbelievable. Well, I got to find a picture of those silks.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he had him on that night.
If Tony must not be listening, otherwise he would have already texted me. But without a doubt, and that dam actually that Mo Honor, her only win, Harry Vega booted that one home, one off by six that day at Philly Park. Pretty.
She's been a nice mare for Pat. Pat's had some nice babies out of her.
She's by Honor and Glory.
Yes. Yep.
John, I really appreciate it. Larry Jones was on right before you, and Lenny Shulman reached out to me. He wanted to talk about, you know, Rick's generosity and you know, his attentiveness to the welfare of his horses and others. And the game can never afford to lose, you know, people like Rick Porter.
No, not many around like that anymore.
John Service, everybody. John, good luck this week with those starters, and we'll be watching and probably betting a little.
Sounds good. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. We'll see you this summer. John Service, everybody. And thanks. I love it. Now we got something for Tony on Thursday. Pretty funny. Rode Porter's first winner. And who knew about the silks? Before the red and white blocks came a pink jacket with a fox head. We'll scour the internet for that. All right, we're gonna reach out to Andy. Andy Serling joins us here next, and then Brad Cox will close out the morning. And looking forward to some of Andy's thoughts here next. I as we were talking with both Larry and with John, I was printing out charts one after the other. And, you know, you look at some of these races, you know, that are less, you know, less well-known or less well-remembered, like that Remsen. And just, you know, just seeing the name Galloping Grocer made me laugh. I mean, it's funny. Just the other day, we were with Gary and Tina and I and Gary and Josephine, and we went by some grocery and we were talking. I don't know how it came up. Oh, it came up because we're talking about one of the markets, North Shore Farms and you know, some of they're sort of combination delis and you know, prepared foods and whatnot. And we were talking grocers, and I brought up Waldbaum's, and here's Galloping Grocer comes up in the chart. Andy Serling joins us. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. And it just had John Service on, and we're paying respects to Rick Porter. And of course, John really gave him his driving start. And among the horses we talked about were Jostle and Rockport Harbor. And you know, a lot of their exploits and Porter's early success came, you know, in New York, both at Belmont and Saratoga. One race that I referenced you, and I had forgotten about it until I looked, was the Rockport Harbor's performance over Galloping Grocer. So that's where that came from. I think did we lose Andy? We lost Andy. All right, get Andy back, and we'll dive in and talk about we'll get going. Here, I'm just digging through this thing. What case will get them back? Okay. All right. Casey said the phone went dead. All right. You know, we could do maybe if you can't reconnect, we could maybe switch. Let's see. It's 11. We could maybe flip-flop with Brad. So, there we go. Got him back? There we go.
Yeah, there's I don't know Andy. What happened. Yeah, my phone just disconnected. Sorry.
No problem. Andy, we had Steve Asmussen earlier too this morning, and talked about winning a third Met. I thought that was one of the best stories from the weekend. The terrific performances from Essential Quality and Hot Rod Charlie, domestic spending. One of the biggest issues, not issues, but one of the challenges out of this oversized Belmont Stakes Day is that there's just so many great things and great performances that happen. They all can't get the attention you'd like them to.
Oh, you know, I don't know. Does the same thing happen Breeders' Cup weekend?
A little bit, yeah. It does. It does.
So what do you think? We should run the Breeders' Cup one race a weekend?
That, you know what? That we should talk about that.
Of all the things to complain about in horse racing, that when you, I would make the argument that when you have a day like this or a weekend like the Breeders' Cup, you've drawn so many more people into the conversation and brought so many viewers together that it actually brings more attention to it. So I don't know. It feels like we can find better things to complain about racing.
It's a challenge because I'm about what 5 hours into the recapping. I've barely talked about the nice performance of that Estio Talentosa winning the Better Roses. Haven't talked about Kunlima in the Wonder again for Eclipse and Todd. And then of course there's the undercard races. I brought it up with Chad yesterday. I said, Chad, I can't let you go without talking about Soft Power. And by the way, I heard your prattle for that race, and you dissected that about the new market purchases, and you said to everybody, this horse at 5-1 is the right play.
Well, I say that sometimes, and quite often they run 6. So I don't know if I want to use the fact that the horse won. It's just in my experience that the horses that Klarovich has purchased, that Chad's had, at Tattersall's have done well.
Tattersall, yeah.
So taking 1 and 5-1 first time seems like a reasonable gamble. I mean, I don't think that's exactly a brilliant opinion. I mean, they've had unbelievable success with a relatively small amount of purchases. So I don't want to,
Who was the horse that you mentioned in that won at 6-1 that was one of those?
No,
Oh, no, I think I said that Bricks and Mortar was like 8-1 in his debut when I was on the show with Anthony.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And he wasn't the Tattersall horse, but my point was they can, you know, Chad Brown has won with first-time starters at prices. I mean, he bet a horse this winter, Southern District, that probably should have won, and he was third at 9-1. He actually ran up on the dirt two starts later and ran very well. I'm interested to see where he shows up next. I wonder, you know, if he's looking for a non-winner as a one, or he's even thinking of the Curlin or something. But listen, I mean, it's, you know, the Tattersall purchases, the ones that have run, have been good. You know, especially the ones that run made in special weights. It just, you know, you think about it, it's not just digital age and domestic spending and newspaper of record and, you know, valid, the horse they won on Sunday, or value proposition it won, good governance. I mean, it goes on. Technical analysis, it wouldn't have a particularly good trip in the Wonder again. You know, there have been others, and it just seems like, and there's one that won that stake at Tampa that's sort of okay. Counterparty risk. There have been a plethora of them, you know, and the ones that have run have been good for the most part. So, and this one's off power. You know, the male turf division is a little wanting. Hard Love ran well to win that last race on Sunday against older horses. I mean, I think there's nothing more than that, but I think that soft power is the worst. I mean, I don't know what trajectory he goes on. If he finds a non-winner as a one, or maybe they run into Manila on July 4th weekend, the timing's pretty good, and then see if they can get him to Saratoga or, you know, for either the Man of War, not Man of War, the Hall of Fame, or the even the Saratoga Derby. You know, I don't know what his distance thoughts are with the horse, but you know, an 84 buyer first time out, bigger buyer than Public Sector got in the same connections. Another Tattersall horse, by the way, who won his debut on Friday. Hard Love got a 92 buyer. You know, wow. He and the horse that Baffert won with on Derby Day might be the best two 3-year-old turf horse out there, and I have no idea what the story is with the Baffert horse. Obviously, that's a bit of a conundrum, to say the least.
Well, and speaking of some conundrums, I want you to address a couple of things. Let's go to Friday for a second. And, you know, here came, we thought we were dodging a bullet, and then the deluge comes. And we lose, you know, Antoinette from the New York. And now suddenly, you know, Mean Mary gets elevated under the conditions.
And the other speed didn't go.
The other speed didn't go.
We broke the field by about a length and a half. I mean, she shot out of the gate like a cannonball. You know, she just flew out of the gate. And she's a very nice horse, but she's also a horse that, because of her speed, has gotten herself into fortunate situations. I don't want to take that away from her just because she's gotten good trips to win. She's still a pretty good horse. I mean, she fought Russian Falls, the Wire, and the Diana. And yeah, she had the right trip in there, but listen, she's got the speed and the others don't. So good for her. And I'm always happy to see Grand Motion, you know, win big races. probably a little fortunate to be Thundering Nights, but, you know, you get a little unfortunate more often than you get fortunate. So that's okay. I think that she certainly deserves the good reputation she has by her resume.
And it'll be interesting to see what, we haven't had Graham yet, but, you know, we talked obviously after the Gallarette, and, I don't know. It put me on the defensive a little bit with my plays and my 2-day plays. Baron Samedi, that was an interesting race, the 2-mile Gold Cup, Andy, and Johnny rode him like he couldn't lose, and then ran like he, you know, I thought,
oh,
hey, why was it
on paper, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Why? I was surprised there was no inquiry after the way he forced himself out.
Well, if you watched the head-on, you would have seen there was no reason to.
Did not see the.
Yeah, there was no reason to. He was clear of Javier's horse, and he came out, and I bet Javier's horse, so I've been happy with the disqualification. But no, he was well clear, and you could see it if you saw the head-on.
Well, that was, you know, there were the two International Invader wins on the weekend in the Just a Game, Althika beating her her stablemate for Appleby, and of course part of a mammoth, a mammoth international weekend for Godolphin, folding in the Epsom Derby win earlier in the day, and then of course capping with essential quality. Let's talk about the Belmont for a minute, and then we'll jump back around with some of the other performances, like the Met and the sprints. Your Belmont thoughts in retrospect now?
You know, it. I wouldn't say it's unusual, but it's always very satisfying when you have a big race and you have a really, really good performances. And this wasn't just one good performance. This was two. 109 buyer for essential quality, a 108 for the runner-up. I mean, that's the kind of thing, you know, we saw in the good old days. And these horses really ran. It was almost 2 seconds faster than a blowout win in the Brooklyn by Low Rock. It was a good older horse. It was just a terrific race. I think that Essential Quality did a good job in sort of backing up people that felt he might have run the best race in the Derby. So all the people think he ran the best race in the Derby also think he ran the best race in the Belmont just because he won. But that's another discussion we can have. He's, an absolute division leader. He's been terrific. And I think we saw in the Derby that he took a bit of a step forward. He ran the fastest fig he'd ever run while getting a bit of a wide trip. So there was reason to believe he was finally showing that improvement that he hadn't really shown yet in his career. He had just been a precocious horse to continue to run very, very well. But he seems to really be step forward. And, I mean, at this point, there's no reason to believe he's not only, as good as any three-year-old in the country, but we'll discuss Hot Rod Charlie in that respect. But these horses have a right to be as good, if not better, than the older horses come the end of the year. If they're running, that's a very big number. And granted, a mile-and-a-half race, but they really ran. And Hot Rod Charlie, he was tremendous in the feed. It's probably one of the better big race losses you'll see. I mean, he cut the fastest first quarter in the history of the Belmont. The first quarter and first half were fractions you don't see in a lot of 6-4-long races, frankly. Considering, obviously France go to Ina is not competitive with these horses, but he was completely eased. And, he came across the wire well behind the rest of the field. And Rock Your World didn't break again. He finished 20 lengths behind, so you see what kind of toll the pace put on the other horses, and yet he was battling back every step of the way. And, those of us that believe that Hot Rod Charlie ran a better race, I think that we have a legitimate argument to back that up. It's a typical misunderstanding of people, especially on social media, that somehow denigrates the performance of Essential Quality, when in fact, obviously, the opposite is true. Essential Quality had gotten a 98 buyer, we would have said, well, Power Charlie may have run the best race, but it was a stinker of a Belmont. So, but the fact that Essential Quality ran as well as he did only elevates Hot Rod Charlie even more, and vice versa. And I think that's one of the most satisfying parts of this race. It was a really thrilling race, and it was also a really good race. It wasn't two sort of mediocrities battling down the stretch on their way to a 97 buyer. Was two really good horses battling down the stretch on the way to a very fast figure, and figures do matter. And in this case, they are further proof of what a good race it was. I'm still excited by it, and really would love and hope that these horses meet up again in the Traverse. Good horses is one thing, but rivalries are really the most thrilling thing you could see in the game. I've been around for Affirmed and Allied R and Easy Goer and Sunday Silas. And people still talk about these races. They still debate who the better horse was. I mean, it's not what's better than that, And it would be nice. It's always nice these horses get a chance, The Silver Charm, Free House, those matchups on the racetrack. Those were great for the game, so I can't say enough good about both the first two finishers in the Belmont.
No, it was fun, and it was rousing. It was really a perfect ending, and the redemptive aspect that for those that that were riding the Essential Quality undefeated streak, etc., into Derby, it you know, it's a very good jumping off point toward the second half of the year. And we're going to have, I mean, Andy, just the fact that Andy Beyer yesterday, Andy, you know, he reached out to me Sunday night and he said, "Do people realize how great a race that was?" And I said, "No, but you come and tell him tomorrow." And he said, I'd like that. So, and if it got Andy excited, it undoubtedly, you know, should excite many.
No, you know, listen, what you want is good performances in big races. What people needed to do is separate themselves from their own opinions. And this very sad narrative taking place, that because people picked Essential Quality before the race, they're unable to acknowledge that he may not have been the best horse. I picked the Super Cold. Now, let's not get carried away. I think it was the first, second, fourth, and fifth choices, so it's hardly one of my more astounding opinions, to say the least. But nonetheless, the fact is, I don't think it was a perfect selection in the sense that probably it should have been the other way around in front. It doesn't mitigate what Essential Quality does, and stop, you know, believing because you picked a horse that somehow it's winning somehow validates you as a good handicapper. Find other ways to validate yourself in life and look at things objectively.
Yeah, it's funny this comes up because I opened the show to some degree. I included that. I mean, you can't even call them spirited debates because they're not spirited debates. They're proclamations.
I have two concurrent polls going up. One of which has gotten about 2,000 responses I put up earlier, and the other one I haven't looked recently, but I'll take a look. I'm guessing has over 500 responses, and I think they're kind of interesting. Almost 600 responses. 600 responses versus 2,100 responses. And the one with 2,100 responses is who ran the better race in the Belmont, Essential Quality or Hot Rod Charlotte. And the other one is who ran the better race, Birdstone and Smarty Jones. Well, Smarty Jones, who lost, but was extremely popular at a very short price, has almost 60% of the vote, as Essential Quality, who's extremely popular, and that was a short price. So the logic being used in one poll is the opposite of the logic being used in the other
poll.
That's
great.
I guess based on popularity and price. And the funny thing to me is that I think that in relative terms, it's much more clear that Hot Rod Charlie ran the better race. The pace was much faster, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I also think Birdstone ran really well. And the funny thing is that Birdstone was almost exactly as far away from the pace as Essential Quality was. The only argument is Essential Quality moved up a little sooner. But the pace was much more moderate in the Belmont Stakes that the Smarty Jones was on top of. And the figure was much lower. So it is what it is, you know?
Part of the appeal of this, I had seen the Belmont, you know, who ran the better race poll from last night. I had seen that one, but I had not seen the one this morning. That is brilliantly juxtaposed.
Making decisions based on who you bet or which horses you like more might make you happy, but it's definitely going to make you broke too. You're betting. Whatever percentage these people are betting or not. And you know, the pools are not made up of money by people that actually think that it's very clear that Essential Quality ran the better race.
Well, and minutes ago, we had John Service, and Smarty was well referenced earlier this morning. Pretty funny. Andy, let's touch on one thing, and you can fold in the results, particularly from Saturday. I went through the two-day numbers, and, I mean, remarkably, it was the pick six that had the best value, especially because it was eminently hittable. All you had to do was come up with Casa Creed. I mean, the other five races were won by the favorites, and the thing paid almost, nine times the parlay, $2,078. What was your thoughts about the wagering aspects of the weekend?
Honestly, it was an enormously busy weekend. It's not something I've spent a lot of time looking at. I don't know if these things pay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but
there
was a lot going on this weekend, and again, the nuance of the wagering. I'm extremely happy with the handle numbers we got. I mean, Friday we were right in line with what we hoped to be under unusual circumstances and with a couple of very small fields. And Saturday, the numbers were spectacular, a record in a non-Triple Crown attempt year.
Right.
And that's a credit to the bettors and the people that support the game. I've said it before and I'll say it forever. There are two people who support this game. Owners and bettors, each of them put their money up, and without either one of them, I wouldn't have a job, and frankly, you wouldn't have anything to talk about, and you wouldn't have a show either. And there's no debt of gratitude too big to bettors. They are the ones that fuel the game. And we get great support from our customers and our bettors. It's important to note bettors. It's important to have fans. It's important to have customers, but it's endlessly important to acknowledge the bettors are the ones that support us, and they make the world go round, and we got great support. And to me, that's, it's a good feeling to know that people are supporting your product and you work at a place, and I'm proud to work there, and I can't say enough about how much I appreciate that support.
No, well said.
Makes it easy to work, and work as hard as you can for people that, support what you're doing. And that support is shown through the windows.
Well, and one of the biggest prices of the weekend, I mentioned Casa Creed's win in the Jiper, and bringing him all the way down to 6 furlongs looks like a tonic, and a huge
win. You wonder
win.
What he could have done if he had been running there the last 2 years.
Fair point. Well, certainly he's gonna look for these kinds of opportunities, although. In the immediate aftermath, Bill Mott and Lee Einsiedler, to some extent yesterday when he was with us, they don't necessarily have, I guess they got the Troy, but they could also, head for the 4-star Dave again, too.
Listen, if you can't repeat the mistakes of the past, then who are you?
Well, wait a minute.
Run him in the Troy and run him in the sprint at Kentucky Downs on September 11th.
And skip the mile.
He's already shown that he's a really nice horse in a mile, but he's probably not going to win those races. I'm thrilled for Lee, and they should do whatever they think. It's their horse, but I thought he showed definitively on Saturday that he's a better turf sprinter. He's just a good horse, so he's been competitive enough in those races.
The issue that they're going to be concerned with, if you're thinking of Breeders' Cup as maybe the $1 million race at Kentucky Downs is the Breeders' Cup for them, because
it was a million this year, it was three quarters last year.
They said it was a million, and the concern that they had immediately was the 5 furlong distance at Del Mar being,
he's more likely to win the Breeders' Cup sprint at 5 furlongs than win the mile.
That's true. That's fair.
The Breeders' Cup mile, having said that, there is a lot more value to win the Breeders' Cup mile. But getting a stallion deal for grass horses, who's his sire?
Jimmy Creed.
Yeah, it's not something that's that likely to happen. So, but listen, you're always allowed to ask yourself equity questions. It's always important to ask yourselves equity questions. But it seems to me that he's a better horse sprinting by a lot than a miler. He's not my horse. They can do what they want.
Well,
the problem regarding the 4-star Dave is it's also very much closer to the race at Kentucky Downs. I think
yeah, true.
Troy is probably Whitney weekend, though I'm not certain.
It usually is in the first 10 days, give or take, of the meet. Well, a couple of other. Let's jump around a little bit. Obviously, some of the luster came out of the Ogden Phipps with Valiance and Swiss Skydiver scratching, but Letruska backs up the Apple Blossom with another grade one.
No, I agree. Obviously, especially without Swiss Skydiver in there, it did. But I don't think that takes away from what Truska did. She just destroyed that show. She is clearly the leader of that division and a very, very nice horse.
Agreed. Thoughts on the Met? I've talked to Steve Asmussen earlier.
Troy is Friday, August 6th for the Troy.
There you go.
By the way, my thoughts, and I think the 21st, no, the 14th is the four-star day. It's not that bad. It's 4 weeks to that race. My thoughts on the Met? I think Silver Slate stays a really nice horse, a neat horse. It's too bad that Nick Stowe didn't show up. By my standards, ran well, and that's trouble to start. It was a historically slow Met mile. I mean, I look back to its exciting story, winning the Met is probably the weakest since that one. And the Met's my favorite race of the year, but it's not one of the more memorable ones from an overall performance standard. I think Silver Slate's a really neat horse, and obviously Steve's done a great job with him. He's won six straight races now, and in a lot of ways, the accomplishment is very much up with the leaders of the division, along with Mystic Guide at this point. But it wasn't a very fast race, and at some point, you're going to have to run faster races. I would imagine that Maxfield's probably pointing towards the Whitney, maybe a Foster Whitney, and based on his 105 buyer in his last race in the Ali Sheba, he may finally be sort of blossoming into a faster horse. So he'll be tough for Silver State to beat, but Silver State keeps winning, and there's something to be said for that, for sure. We got another very good ride by Ricardo Santana as well.
Eddie, talk about the Just a Game, and I made the point to Chad yesterday. I was really rooting for Regal Glory, and she just did not get out of the gate, and it kind of doomed her. She made that looming bid and then flattened out a little bit. I think it's a different race.
Racing. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Racing. Can't do that too much. The first two ran very well. I mean, they were two horses that inside trips. In fact, the first four finishers, I think all of them spent most of the race inside, for whatever it's worth. They ran very well. Charlie Appleby came there with a purpose. He got beaten ahead, and I think right by heart that Hard Love later in the card. And his two horses in Just a Game ran very well, and I think they exposed, not to knock them because they're nice horses, but they're sort of Group 3 European types. They kind of exposed the weakness in that division for us, at least as of now. And it kind of says to me, boy, if there's some good 3-year-old fillies, I don't know who they are, but if there are milers, that maybe by the time the matriarch rolls around, they'll be the ones you want in that race, because it wasn't a great group going in, and as well as those two horses ran, I think it sort of exposed our horses a little bit. I mean, I know Pocket Square was highly touted. She was a little wide, but she didn't fire at all in the stretch. Tamma here got rank and was wide and out in the clear and clearly not going to run her race based on her position early, but okay, so where does that leave her, And she's still yet to run a particularly fast race, so that's the division that the milers, at least for the older fillies, it's a little wanting at this point. If I were Charlie Appleby, I'd be planning to come back to the First Lady at Keeneland. And if I were other Europeans, I'd be thinking about that as well.
Well, speaking of which, we'll get a few more reads on the international makeup next week at Royal Ascot.
The star of the day outside of the Belmont was Domestic Spender.
Yes.
I mean, he was just tremendous in victory. I think there is a reasonable discussion right now of, whether or not he's as good, if not, if he's on par with a horse like Bricks and Mortar, who won the Horse of the Year 2 years ago and won this race 2 years ago. He was brilliant there, and he really showed you know, to understand the trips in the race at Churchill. When you compare the trips to the horse he did heat at Churchill, and then you compare their respective trips on Saturday, that he really is just an exceptional horse. And no knock on Coralia, who, you know, was wide a bit and chasing the pace and didn't have a really good setup on Saturday. He's a better horse than he showed on Saturday, and he's backed that up with the races. But I think it really showed who the best older turf horse is in the country, especially going a bit longer. He's an exceptional racehorse, domestic spending. Trebuven backed up his sort of,
how about that,
improved win in the Fort Marcy. Well, he's improved as a gelding too, which should be noted. But domestic spending was really, really, really thrilling.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Andy, let's summarize let's group all the one turn races kind of together from Friday and Saturday. I had Kelly Breen on yesterday. Firenze Fire is just so admirable. And Search Results, we talked with Chad yesterday. He obviously was thrilled, get her poised for a run at the 3-year-old Philly Championship and a likely rematch with Malathat along the way. We should also throw in, Andy, I shouldn't gloss over, if we're going to talk one-turn dirt performances, Following C on Friday, which should have people, right? And even
right,
Mahama.
The Following C and Highly Motivated in the Dwyer would be really exciting. I'm looking forward to that. I guess that's on Stars and Stripes Day on July 10th. But I agree, he got 100 buyer. He's a very talented horse. I think one of the nice things about Firenze Fire for me, he's got terrific connections that are easy to root for. And now that he's with Kelly Breen, as opposed to a trainer that's under indictment, federal indictment for using performance-enhancing drugs, people like myself can root for him. And he's a great horse to root for. I don't know if I've ever bet him. So he's a short price when he wins anyway. But how do you not appreciate Firenze Fire, right? And you love the connection. He's still running, and he's running as well as he ever ran, if not better in a lot of cases. And I hate the narrative that he's a better Belmont horse, because I just think he's a damn good horse. And I don't want to hear that he needs Belmont Park to run well, because I just think he's good. And to me, there's few, if any, horses in the game right now that are more fun to root for than Firenze Fire. He's the kind of horse that I'll probably pick against him in some big race like the Vanderbilt, and I'll be happy when he beats me.
Yeah, I agree.
Eventually, I agree.
The other, you know what I haven't mentioned at all are the two Wesley Ward baby winners, the Tremont Overbore, the Spitestown, and the Run Happy, that Happy Soul, 81 buyer in the Astoria.
I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, who? I know, right? They're just, you know, the two-year-old races in passing, the short fields.
The two-year-old races probably won't have a lot of bearing on the two-year-old races later this year.
Well, what about that Wit had the bad start?
Well, he got a 70 buyer after blowing the brake and breaking about a length and a half slow. So it's a good start. You know, I'm rooting for those practical jokes. But once again, it's got a 70 buyer, so I don't want to get too carried away. But obviously, he has the potential to be okay. He's got the right trainer to do it. But I'm always very circumspect over races. The numbers don't come back that high. I kind of want to see them again. Though he was visually impressive, for sure.
And finally, Drain the Clock and Jackie's Warrior in the Woody.
Yeah, I mean, you know, once again, Jackie's Warrior probably ran the better race, and he was a bit unlucky. Drain the Clock came over, and he had to steady out after the start. But that doesn't take away from the fact that Drain the Clock really stepped forward and ran a vastly improved race from any race he had ever run. He was 5 for 7, but they were much slower races, and this was a much different situation than the Bayshore, and even with having the better trip of he and Jackie's Warrior, still had to run well to beat them, and look forward to seeing them in Saratoga. It's sort of hard not to be a Jackie's Warrior fan, and yeah. I don't mean this to knock on Drain the Clock in any way. He had to run very well to beat him, but Jackie's Warrior is a cool horse. I mean, I like fast horses that keep running, and it's hard not to like him.
Yeah, and talked to Steve earlier, and they're refocused and heading for the summer. And
I can't hear you.
Andy, finally, great weekend overall. Great job by everybody at Belmont. looking forward to Thursday. We've got pick six carryover.
We do. 67,000 or something. 66 almost, right?
67, I think, yeah.
Something like that.
Yep.
All right. Who's on next?
Brad Cox.
Saving the best for last. See you later.
Well, he had a funny Bye. Schedule today.
Yeah. Okay. Give him my best. Congratulations, Bill. I will. See you later.
Thanks. Andy Serling, everybody, and the Belmont recap. And here's the ultimate Belmont recap, because Brad Cox is going to join us up. All right, keep try him again, Case. He was involved in a I know he had a meeting, but he thought that that would be – he thought that they would be done. Let me just send him a little Zetsy, a little reminder. Hold on. Bear with me. All right. Casey trying. All right. Yeah, keep trying him, because he thought that, yeah, I actually said 11:35. It's not like we're, late. So he's had undoubtedly only getting back to the track today. Oh, you're saying it's going, ooh, that's not good. That's going directly to the, that usually means a phone is either dead. Ugh, all right. All right, well, we'll try to, give him a couple of tries. You know what, that does buy us a moment to fill in some other blanks from the weekend, right? Because they did run races elsewhere. We talked to Chad in passing about Al Taff and Devamani. He won Dylan Davis on Sunday. And Nick Juarez getting a graded stake win in that Mammoth stake. Santa Anita, I'll mention Baltus and Venetian Harbor wins the Monrovia. That was on Saturday. Let's be honest, kind of tough to be watching everything else, right? Ellie, the one thing I didn't bring up with Andy was the we covered it yesterday too, the Jose Ortiz IRAD situation, and the final tally was, well, actually I printed out the non-stake starters too, so essentially 1, 2, 3 winners: Firenze Fire, Witt, Drain the Clock, and Latruska. And Witt was the maiden win, so 4 of the 2 days for IRAD, and he'll be back. Give him another week. And I didn't see any update about Kendrick Carmouche's surgery yesterday. He had flown down to Tri-State Skyline Medical Center in Nashville to have the that same orthopedic surgeon work on his ankle. So we'll look for an update. All right. All right, Case. Casey tells me that the phone is still going. All right, directly to voice. All right, that's a problem. All right. Let me see. Then I was not. I didn't really plan on a backup, because we didn't really expect. Oh, there's one. Oh, there's one chart that just popped up that I didn't have in my stack that I just went through with Andy, and that was although he mentioned Lone Rock and the win in the Brooklyn in passing. The other stakes action from the weekend. How about we talked to Mighty Bo with Michelle? Evangeline, you had the Louisiana Legends sequence Ron Fauché with the Birdies Galaxy in the sprint, and Diego Sainez and Cilla in the Mademoiselle, Brett Brinkman, Steve Flint, a MAGA man in the turf. Eddie Johnston won the turf distaff with Offspring, who's an Into Mischief, and Choo Choo's Legacy, Alan Landry, won the Cheval and the Soiree Winning Romance, Brett Calhoun. You know, I'll repeat, I mentioned this yesterday, I think, Brett Calhoun, the decision to come to New York for the Met Mile, I mean, and they did not get beat by much in the Met with by my standards. That was a clever maneuver. Got beat a length. I will tell you this. I happened to be with, I mentioned earlier that watched the Met on the TV at the top of the tunnel and with Dave Groening, and Brad Cox was right there with the TV's the TV cameras trained on him. And as we were coming down, Dave had the chance, he saw Gabe Saez coming up, and Dave wanted to get a couple of thoughts, and Gabe Saez was furious and upset and gave a no comment. I mean, a vociferous no comment. So I think, I don't know, maybe I know that by my standards got out a little bit there in the stretch, and I don't know if there was a point where, you know, he felt like the outcome could have, you know, been different, but he ran well. Didn't Knicks go, came, you know, Andy talked about watching the head-on for the, in the Gold Cup. I did see the head-on flash a few times of the start of the Met, and Knicks go and Joel kind of, right, they took a bit of a left turn. Should watch that again, because it kind of was, I think, let me see, it was by my standards, I think, was he right? Yeah, he was right next to him. So he might have taken the worst of that. But anyway, Saez was not happy with that outcome. So listen, you want your rider to be to be bitterly disappointed when they don't win, right? That's what you want as an owner. So there you go. Well, that's the majority. I don't think there's probably some other wagering elements that I wouldn't mind fleshing out too. And I'm just looking here at this is some of the Thursday Friday stuff. One thing I didn't bring up that was crazy from, what was it, Thursday or Friday, with the no contests at Churchill. That was the craziest thing ever. The two no contests. I do hear a little echo. Is that Brad Cox in the background?
It is.
How did you sneak in? What door did you come through?
sorry about that. I was on the other line.
No, no problem. No. You've had a busy morning. That's what happens when you become a Mr. Classic winner. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for having me on as well.
I'm going to tell you something, because I've told the story now a little bit. Dave Groening and I are standing there at the TV at the top of the tunnel, and we're just ready to watch the Met. And it can't be fun, Brad, to have those cameras tailing you and in your face, and then, you know, trained on you as you're watching your horse off the board. That's got to be maddening.
Yeah, it can be. It happens, though. It does happen, and it obviously happened Saturday in that in the Met Mile. But, you know, it's just part of the game and, you know, the ups and the downs. And, you know, happy that Nixco did come out of the race in good order. So just probably going to, you know, point for races around two turns for sure moving forward.
I bring it up because the next time I saw you afterward was on the path, you know, through the underpass up to the paddock, and you had the game face on. I mean, you looked pensive pre-race, and it had to be just such a relief and really thrilling to get the first classic win, get this horse his last chance. I mean, you get three chances at this depending on the way the calendar falls, and you know, you chose Derby and then to wait. Talk about Saturday's win.
Yeah, no, it was huge. It was. And honestly, you know, when as I was watching the race live on a television, you know, it was honestly the last right there as he crossed the number wire. I mean, it was a feeling I'd never had before as far as racing goes, and just, you know, just the enjoyment of winning a Triple Crown race. And, you know, obviously, you know, Belmont won 53. I mean, it's been around 153 times. It's a you know, incredibly prestigious race. And, you know, really, it's I think of it as New York's biggest race. And obviously, New York's the NYRA circuit is a huge part of American racing and part of racing worldwide. And it was just an amazing, amazing day and a race, and, you know, very proud of this colt and what he's given us as a stable, and, you know, happy for Sheikh Mohammed as well. You know, he's put so much into the game, and it was an amazing victory.
Talk about the 5 weeks and, you know, the decision process and what you were focused on and, you know, how he either changed or, you know, was the same, or you could sense, you know, these are still three-year-olds before the midway point on the calendar. So they're still growing. They're still changing. What was the 5 weeks like between races?
Well, you know, the first, I was very happy with how he came out of the Derby. His first work back was by himself. He went a half in like 50 and 3/5. You know, just nice and easy. We weren't looking for anything fancy. And he came out of that in good order, and we marched forward. And we obviously did a little bit, you know, we got serious with him 2 weeks out prior to the Belmont. And he put in a really good work, was very pleased with how he was moving. And at that point, between that half mile and that 5/8, I spoke with Jimmy Bell and Dan Pride, and, you know, just said, look, you know, if we don't march forward to the Belmont, you know, I'm going to back off of him a little bit. And those guys give me the green light to say, hey, you know, if he's good, press on. And that's what we did. And he responded extremely well with a nice work 2 weeks out. And then he followed it up. You know, really wasn't looking to do quite as much with him a week out as he did, but he was on it. He breezed really well with Bonnie South. Both of them breezed phenomenal together. I think it was 59-4 out 12 and change, and it's like, wow, you know, they're doing well. He came out of the work in good shape, shipped him to Belmont. He had two really good gallops over the main track, and then two gallops over the training track there at Belmont as well. So, you know, he handled both surfaces fine. He schooled great. Only schooled him once. He schooled so well 2 days out that we had decided not to school him the day before. Sometimes we school him 2 days and 2 days in a row, and we decided against it. And he gave us all the positive signs. He hadn't regressed at all. It seemed like out of the Derby at all. And he actually moved forward, it seemed like, in some of the figures he received post-Belmont.
Strategically, give us a feel for, you know, the approach, or at least the expectation. I mean, when you've got Louis and Saez knows, you know, what to expect and what he's got under him, what was your anticipation, and talk about watching it as it unfolded?
I thought he would be a little bit closer to the pace, and as actually watched the race several times yesterday, and it's almost as if Rumbauer beat him to the rail. He broke, essential quality broke well, but about five jumps into it, Rumbauer kind of came over just a little bit and kind of took our position. I mean, he was just faster to the spot, it looked like to me, where
when we had raced against Rumbauer previously, like in the Bluegrass, we were in front of him. So I kind of thought we would be in front of him, but he kind of took our spot. I shouldn't say took our spot, but he kind of beat us to it. It wasn't our spot. He beat us to it, fair and square. And Louis kind of come up off of the rail and made a good position, got a good position going into the turn to kind of keep him in the clear a bit. But, you know, obviously I thought we'd be a little bit closer to the pace, but obviously the pace was a little quicker than I thought. Kind of remind me a little bit of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, where they were going, a good clip up front. And obviously he was setting off of them. So, I kind of started thinking, well, this kind of looks like the Breeders' Cup run here. But as they turned up the back side, I noticed the whole field kind of came together. You could kind of
see
all eight horses were within, I would say, probably six lengths of each other.
Yep.
And then I thought, well, we're in a good spot. We're going to lose some ground going into that turn, but, you know, obviously that's where Louis has him and where he feels comfortable with him. And honestly, I mean, obviously it was a great ride, but I kind of thought, oh, we're not moving too early. But then once again, I thought back to myself, well, they are well grouped, so you know they're all probably traveling well within themselves. So I really like how Louis gradually got up to him, you know, kind of going into the turn and then around the turn, you know, turn for home with this head where I thought we needed to be, and that's what I kind of envisioned. We turn for home right there with our head, you know, in front or right next to the leader, and you know he's able to really show his stamina down the lane, and you know we always kind of thought he was a mile and a half horse. You never know till you try, but he didn't let us down for sure.
It reminded when you say that, actually it occurs to me visually it was a lot like the Juvenile.
Yeah, I thought so. Obviously we had a much further run down the lane. Keeneland's a short stretch mile and a 16th,
right?
But yeah, it was very similar race. I thought out of all of his races it matched the Juvenile more than any of them.
Getting the chance to win a classic, and you cap an amazing day. I mean, I've said this between you and Appleby. It was just a tremendous day in New York and at Epsom, of course, winning a Derby. And just so happens we were – where were you, by the way, Saturday night? We were at King of Birdos, and Dan Pride and Jimmy and Letty McLaughlin, they were all at the next table. Where did you eat?
Yeah, I stayed at the barn. Some of the help ordered pizza. I had a slice of pizza, and I went home with the bed.
Great.
I was absolutely exhausted. But it was, you know what? I had had dinner with Dan and Jimmy the night before at Garden City, and we had a good evening, and you know it was a long day, and it was actually kind of cool just to kind of hang out with the barn help and have a slice of pizza, and we wrapped things up around 9:30. It was that late, honestly, just called it a day and was up the next morning. Watched a couple horses breeze on Sunday morning, and we had some action on Sunday at Belmont.
Well, and the Louisiana bred wins the Jersey Girl on Sunday, the Australasia, who has done very little wrong. And so that was nice. And the week started technically at Prairie Meadows with the two with Gagetown and Plainsman. In fact, Plainsman got a big fig, I saw. Got a big number. 97.
Yeah, I didn't see, but yeah, he's a nice horse. Obviously, he was a great three
95.
Winner at Aqueduct as a 3-year-old. So
yeah.
He's a good horse with a lot of back class.
Talk quickly about some of the, you know, the more disappointing parts of the day. We already talked about Nick's Go. I thought Bonnie South, who, you know, you started an avalanche, by the way, with me on Monday, because after you said what you did, and I told everybody, his eyes lit up when Bonnie South came up, and then a half an hour later, Ron Anderson was going on and on about her, and then everybody, Mike Welch, everybody was on her, but the race kind of, it wasn't really the race that was expected. And why was She Dares the Devil nowhere to be found?
Well, you know, I really don't know. Happy to report
sorry.
Phillies did come out of the race in great order. They shipped back to Churchill this morning, arrived at Churchill this morning, and both look great. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, Latruska was, she was very dominant. I mean, that's really, you know, just watching the race as far as trying to break it apart. I mean, listen, I don't know if anything changes with the result, if anybody rides anything any different. Latruska was very, very impressive, and congratulations to those connections. And that filly is just an absolute monster right now. And she just, when Jose Ortiz looked behind and went a half and 46 and 3. And I saw his hands and the way he was sitting motionless. I thought, we are in trouble here. So, you know, hats off to that group. That was the big effort, and they had her well prepared.
Well, everybody's waiting because racing starts in just a little bit in Indiana. You've got Patty H. today in the 7th and Pat's Property in the 8th.
Yeah, Pat's Property's off the turf, but we're going to run anyhow. He's doing well. And then Patty H., you know, we're looking forward. She's had a little bit of a freshening since her her starter allowance win there at Gulfstream. And you know, hopefully we can I feel like we got her in a good spot today in the 3-0 filly one out of the
Red Skies at night, 5-1 with De La Cruz tomorrow in the William Henry Harrison.
Yeah, he's coming off a layoff. You know, he's accomplished a little bit up there for the Indiana Breds, and you know, not a lot of options for him. But hopefully, you know, he'll make a good showing off the layoff.
How about this 2-year-old for Wonder, Mattaket, and Golconda, Blessed Life, the hard-spun filly at Churchill on Thursday.
Yeah, she's doing well. I like this filly. She's, you know, done everything right since we've picked her up. She was, you know, broke well in Ocala this winter, sent up to us, and really has done everything right. And you know, hopeful that, you know, she can show up, and have a big effort first time.
Well, and then on Friday, a firster by Munnings. Let's be clear.
Yeah, Munnings filly that is doing well. Auction maiden, so taking advantage of. You know, the 2-yearling purchase,
sure,
price, but is, you know, drew the one hole. Not wild about that, but she's trained well enough that, you know, hopefully she can, you know, run well.
Looking ahead, Mandaloon and essential quality for the summer plans?
Yeah. Obviously, Mandaloon appointing him for the Pegasus Sunday at Monmouth. We enter a little bit later this week, and, you know, he's ready. He's doing extremely well. He's had 4 very, very solid works since the Kentucky Derby, and that's obviously a prep for the Haskell. And at some point with Essential Quality, we'll get him up to Saratoga. He'll train there for the summer, and we'll come up with a race plan here in the near future.
Well, a Mandaloon Medina Spirit Haskell will be highly anticipated.
That would be fun. Yeah,
yes.
That would be fun. That would be good.
Good for the game. Yes.
Yeah, good for the game. Yeah, whatever makes you know, we want people to tune in and watch the sport, and I think that would be exciting.
Brad, congratulations.
Thanks, Steve. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate the visit, Brad Cox, everybody, and Andy Serling, and of course everything earlier this morning, Rick Porter with Larry Jones and Lenny and John Service as well. Talk to you in the morning, everybody. Good luck.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, 3-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.